Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Troy Gibson, 20 years of career experience, a battalion chief for Hawaii Fire Department. Troy was a surgical technician in the medical field and never had notions of the fire service. It wasn't until he had a discussion with a firefighter that told him how the department works and what they could do to help accelerate his education, which in return got Troy intrigued, where he then applied and the rest was history. I was able to gain insight about how Hawaii Fire works, but also thoroughly enjoyed hearing Troy's viewpoints on different topics we discussed. Hopefully you all can obtain the different gems and nuggets Troy drops throughout the interview. My favorite quote from him was, "You will mess up and be okay with that." With that, I present Troy Gibson.
Good morning. My name's Troy Gibson. I am currently serving as a battalion chief with the Hawaii Fire Department. I've been in the fire service for 20 years, and like Chief Bobby Halton says, it's the best job I've ever had. Grateful and blessed to be doing this, and I'm going to enjoy talking to you today, Danny.
All right. Yes. No. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. You come recommended. So yeah. Let's you let us know how you got into the fire service.
Yeah, so it's I'm not a legacy firefighter. I am the roots of some legacy. I've got quite a few nephews now in the service, but I started out, I guess, in the medical field. That kind of ties me to the fire service. I worked in surgery as a surgical tech, and one day I was jogging, and it was a pretty hot day as Hawaii gets. Had a local fire station not too far from my house, stopped in, asked if I could get some water and utilize the bathroom, ended up talking story. And a gentleman there had a previous medical background also, and said I should join the fire department. I thought you had to go to an academy. I had two young children at the time, obviously a decent paying job. So I didn't even know that was an option. He told me, "Oh, they'll pay for your schooling." Looked into it a little bit more, took the test as most firefighters do, passed it, got to the interview, and got offered the job. So basically the format I was in before, I had a state job at the state hospital. So I had about 6 months where I could really feel it out and had my return rights. So I didn't risk a lot, but I said it's worth a shot. And I loved it from the start. You know, I loved the camaraderie, the bonding. I loved being pushed. And for me, the only regret I have is I didn't do it sooner.
Okay. You did say, I just want to make sure I heard correct. You did say like surgeon, right?
Surgery. So I was a surgical tech.
Okay.
Basically, you stand right next to a surgeon. You pass them the tools. You'll help. So yeah, I mean, I definitely wasn't afraid of the EMS side of fire, and that's unique to our island. All our ambulances are they're run by firefighters. Our whole island are paid staff. We're all EMTs at minimum. So we're a blended department as far as EMS and fire.
Okay.
So yeah, that probably is why I got hired. Because having a formal college training and working in the medical field, paramedics then and still are at a shortage. I'm sure I've disappointed quite a few because I think they had me earmarked for a paramedic, but I quickly got into the department and found that that was not going to be the path I chose.
Okay.
But still loved it, you know, and did the job what I think to be proficient. And yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what got me on, just having that formal medical background as a surgical tech.
Okay. So you get on, was there some sort of academy of recruit class that you have to go through?
Yeah. So our academy is a year long, and that's 6 months of your fire suppression. get your driver training, all that, and then they'll send you to EMT school. So that was part of the draw as well. They'll pay for you to go to school. Then after that, you do your national registry, your state license, you get out, and you rotate around stations for at that time, it was about a month at each station. Then you get your permanent assignment. Came in when we were pretty short, so you could basically get to a station close to your house.
Okay.
At the time, that was in 2004, so
Okay.
you could pretty much get there. So about a year of training, the year of probation, then you start as an actual firefighter, and you have your 6 months probation as a firefighter. So that's kind of the system we work in here on the Big Island.
Okay. And let's talk about the Big Island. Let's talk about your department size, how many stations, amount of personnel, as close as you can get. It doesn't have to be exact.
Sure. We got 20 stations, two hazmat, two rescue stations. When we say rescue, we do a lot of ocean, mountain, swift water. That's what our rescue guys predominantly do. As far as that goes, the island is split into two battalions. That's 4,000 square miles approximately.
Damn.
Yes, so each battalion approximately 2,000 square miles. I work on the west side, nine stations for those 2,000 square miles. The east side has 11.
So
Basically,
20 stations.
yep, and
Okay.
400 paid personnel, 100 and change on the volunteer side.
So combination department.
We are the only combination department. We are also the only department that runs ambulances. So the Big Island's unique in that sense, for sure. All
Okay.
part of the same local as well, which I think is pretty unique, that our whole state, even our crash, so the four counties, Maui, Kauai, Oahu, and Hawaii Island, are all in the same local. We have a pretty decent sized local, and then the state crash are also part of our local.
Okay. How does If you're a volunteer, how does that work with, I'm sure they have to have a certain amount of training hours, maybe, shift work, like explain that.
It is a full volunteer. So I think they train once a month. Our department has two captains. One for that east side, one for the west side. You'll hear that's kind of a common thing with our department. They facilitate their trainings in the evening. They are predominantly wildland firefighters. They do not have respiratory protection. You can't put them in a hazard zone. But over here, having that size of a department, wildland being an emphasis in quite a few of the districts, they have good apparatus, and they do come to the dance and help us out. As I'm sure everybody knows, at least now, Hawaii definitely has a wildfire risk. We do get those over here. Unfortunately, some of the recent events have put us in the national spotlight with some of those devastating incidents.
Okay. So can a volunteer, not only do they do wildland, but if that individual wanted to do structural firefighting, would they be able to stay a volunteer, or would they have to change status to career in order to do structural firefighting?
Yeah, they'd have to go through the process, which we have quite a few of our pay guys who started out as volunteers go through our academy.
Okay.
There's no mechanism for that. And it is, sheerly volunteer, as far as no paid on call, none of those things.
Okay, so if an individual wanted to go structural side, they could not remain a volunteer.
No.
Huh, okay.
No, you have to become a paid guy, go through the academy, do
Okay.
the EMT. Basically, that's the way to get inside a building.
Okay. And what's your first alarm assignment consist of if it's structural related?
So that's different. It's a great question. We don't necessarily call them alarms. Again, when you talk about 2,000 square miles, resources, the station I worked at for a large portion of my career when I was a company officer and below. My next stint is 20 minutes away, 25 sometimes. So a basic, I guess, bread and butter, and I hate to call them that. I'll probably get three engines, maybe a water tender or tanker of some sort, depending on if we have water sources there. And I think we do a pretty dang good job at getting those fires handled with those resources. In town, because we do have some more densely populated areas, you'll get four companies on each other's tailboards, where those companies are kind of close to each other. But that is only in our congested areas. We are a rural island, and we end up fighting fire with a large second in time predominantly out there.
And if so, if it's in an if it's in an if it if the emergency or the fire is in an area that's more rural, you're talking about 20-minute response for the next closest engine?
Yeah, that's kind of
Wow.
how I worked my career. So it's get it done. Get it, fast water was definitely my bread and butter drill. And then there's a lot of defense that you play as well. Look and see, do your risk assessment. Do we have somebody there? And then you make an assessment. Can we offensively attack this fire or not? You have to make those decisions very quick when you're a rural firefighter and a rural company officer, which is the dominant posture we have here on this big on the Big Island.
And what's your minimum staffing consist of?
Our chief has a goal of three-man engines. We still have a couple engines that are two-man engines technically. And if any of the Big Island guys are listening, that sounds a little confusing because we have a lot of off-road tankers and brush trucks at the station. So it is not and has not been uncommon on a large wildfire where the driver is going to drive that engine. I'm the captain. We have a tanker. I'm going to grab that tanker or brush truck. My firefighter is going to grab the tanker or the brush truck, and the medic guys, they'll stay together. So in a five-man house, basically, or five firefighter house, basically. So, but the model for an engine. So, if we get a structure fire, and we're going to take the engine and the medic, obviously, it's a three-man engine. That is, all but two of our stations have that model.
And how many aerial devices do you have?
We have a ladder. That works out of Hilo. And we don't, so the Big Island also doesn't have a lot of high rise that's actually purposeful. Views, even our street lights are yellow and not white. That is because the observatory on the mountain for light pollution. So there's a real conscious effort here on the islands to keep the islands beautiful. And I'm here in a hotel room in Oahu, and you can definitely tell why the Big Island wants that posture, because it definitely feels more metropolitan here in Honolulu, which they have a lot of aerial devices. They run ladders, they do truck work. We don't necessarily have that mechanism here. A lot of that's due to construction and just the way our department was built and type of population we serve.
So there's not very many. What's the tallest building in your area that you know of?
So in our main town, Hilo, they have one 5-story.
And that's it. Okay, so there's really no need because I'm imagining the ladders on your engines are sufficient enough to get to the roof if you need it to.
And you have to remember, in Hawaii, the construction is very different, right? We don't have those robust structures because the weather is nice. So a lot of roof operations, you're talking about tin roof, that you could definitely fall through. Me myself, I'm 270 pounds. I'm not really interested in being on a roof unless it's absolutely necessary, because of that construction, right? Whereas, where you are at North Carolina, I'm sure there's a different construction model.
Oh, definitely. I'm sure. Right.
Because
Right.
you have, obviously colder winters.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right. And speaking of, what's the weather year round in Hawaii normally like?
I like to always say mid-70s and breezy.
Okay.
That's kind of how it feels. We can get a little colder, we can get a little warmer. The winds can change, but yeah, that's kind of our usual model. I mean,
Okay.
the reason people come here to vacation, that's for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And so upon completion of your academy, getting all your certs and everything that you needed, what was your first assignment?
So after I did those rotational assignments, I ended up out at the station I was referring to in North Kohala. I worked out there with our most senior firefighter. He's an engineer at the time. It was a great time, the really senior people and some fresh, enthusiastic firefighters. So I got to be out there. I really enjoyed being a part of the community too. It's a very much so country living, I think, is the best way for me to describe it. You know your community. If somebody needs to get pulled out of the mud, you go and take that apparatus and do that. A lot of downtime, so you do have to have a focus on training. But it was good. I bounced around from there. Then I went to the we have aeromedical on. We have an aeromedical chopper, so I went to that
Oh.
station. That's where the young guys ended up gravitating to, because you got a chopper, you got this big off-road tanker, all the toys are there. So a lot of the young guys ended up there, predominantly on the west side of our island for my career. So got a lot of great wildland experience. From there, I got recruited up to a station. You know how firefighters are. They find, oh, well, we kind of like this guy. Why don't you come and work with us? So, again, got into that wildfire zone. So, I pretty much stayed in the wildfire areas throughout my career, luckily, and just worked that. I mean, it became a passion very early in my career because those are big fires. Those fires last days, sometimes weeks, right? So, I kind of just stayed in that area and just, kept working and going to as many fires as I could go to. Of course, raising your family and doing what have you. But I've mostly worked on the west side of our island in kind of the hotter, drier areas predominantly throughout my career. And I'm currently still there.
Okay. And how does the rank structure work in Hawaii?
Yeah, so you start out, you're a firefighter, obviously. Your next promotion can be some form of specialist. So you could be a hazmat specialist or a rescue. I talked about those two specialty components we have. You can go to the EMS side, which would be like if you're a paramedic, that's called a fire medical specialist. And as far as the next step up, that would be a driver, so a sergeant. A chauffeur, it's very regional, the terms. We call them fire equipment operators, and then captain. So we don't have lieutenants, and that's our basic structure. The EMS side, you can definitely go up to a fire medical specialist 3, which kind of they run a single buggy, do a lot of community paramedicine. We do a fantastic job in that. That is kind of a track. Prevention. So we have a prevention department. So the inspectors are like that sergeant. There is a lieutenant in that bureau. They work as plan reviewers, and then they have captains. And then, of course, all that battalion chief. There's two assistant chiefs, one over operations, one over support services, which is probably, I don't need to expound on that. And then we have one deputy and one fire chief.
And so if the captain's off, does the sergeant or the driver have to slide over, or can a firefighter move up?
Yeah, so when I first came in, there was a lot of TA, we call it, or acting up. Again, those are just regional terms. Our current union CBA, collective bargaining agreement, basically states there's rank for rank hours. So what had happened is I'm a captain. I'm taking off, say, vacation. Hey, Cap, can you cover me? And that works all the way down to the specialist level. So TA has become less prevalent because staffing was short as well. It's starting to bump up. Our fire chief's done a good job about getting us more personnel, increasing our budget. But there was definitely a shift in my career where when rank for rank came into the CBA, a lot of times that's an officer for an officer. And I think that was the union's kind of push there. You're getting that experience, right? The state is young in general, so that was to put some miles behind those seats.
Okay. So it's rank for rank. So if your driver needed off, he would have to trade with another driver.
He could recall a driver call back for overtime. Basically, the sick calls, you still will get those TAs, those ACT UPs, but that was definitely a shift. Once that became part of our CBA, there was a lot less acting up.
Okay. All right. And would you say, like most fire departments at least I should say, at least in the United States, they're more EMS based type calls over fire calls. So what's the criteria over in Hawaii? Is it more, are you running more EMS calls than fire related calls?
So that's a national model, and 80 to 90%
Okay.
you're in the EMS call. So the ambulance is definitely the busiest apparatus.
Okay. And roughly, what's your call volume? Doesn't have to be exact.
I want to say anywhere, I'm going to give you a wide berth, 40 to 50,000 a
Okay.
year. I
Okay.
hope I'm getting that right.
I mean, like I said, it doesn't have to be exact, but okay. All right. And your most busy station. Every department's got to have a busy station. So
We have a
what's
few of
yours?
those. There's
Okay.
one on each side of the island where the metropolitan areas are, and slow day maybe 10 and busy day 30. Those guys cook. They cook. I give them a lot of credit. Worked there for very small stints in my career. And if you're on the ambulance, you're not planning on sleeping for sure.
You do allow you guys work 24s?
Yeah, so I think it's a modified Kelly
Okay.
every other for 3 and then off for 4, and the state follows that model.
Okay. And then I'm assuming if you're on the medic, and as you stated, you're gonna get your teeth kicked in.
Yes.
Do you guys rotate maybe after the first 12, or is it, hey, you're on it for 24, or do you rotate?
I think most of them just kind of take it. That definitely can happen. There's shift dynamics for that and those relationships, but I think most of the firefighters just choose to do that. Of course, our paramedics don't have that choice. They're assigned to the ambulance. So,
Gotcha. Gotcha.
and then the staffing model too. So I have a station where they could have that extra firefighter where they could do that, but a lot of times, our staffing is still thin enough that that firefighter may fly. Maybe somebody's off on vacation. So yeah, you're on those busy ambulances. You work, and I give a lot of credit to the guys who have done decades or
Right.
multiple years there.
Right.
Nobody stays forever, though. That's one thing you
Right.
notice. Nobody
Right.
is gonna not as far as the medics. They will eventually get their experience level and then take it somewhere else. A lot of those are newer medics, really trying to get their experience up, which is great. It's fantastic for them.
Okay. And do you have to be a paramedic to promote there? Is that a requirement?
No,
No. Okay.
just on the EMS track,
Gotcha.
the small track.
Okay. And then another question, because you mentioned the word, a key to my head. You mentioned one of your stations has a helicopter. Is the pilot a firefighter as well, or just straight up pilot?
They are pilots, and we have two helicopters. So we have one on the east side. It's a predominant rescue helicopter. They support a lot of our brush fires with bucket drops. But then we have the aeromedical, and the pilot is a pilot. We have a director of operations who works that space with the pilots, but the actual pilots, although they're in the station, they are just pilots. Way back, we had he was a captain at the time. He moonlighted as a pilot also, but is separate.
Okay. So one does rescue, one's aeromedical. So
Primary mission.
I'm assuming the aeromedical is if like you have a call, some sort of traumatic call, and an ambulance won't cut it, you need a helicopter. That's what they respond to.
Absolutely. So their mechanism is distance to the hospital, of course, type of injury, and where they're going to take the patient, right?
Okay. And both units, are they staffed? Of course, you got to have the pilot, but do they have other staffed personnel assigned?
So the aeromedical, the ambulance crew at that station predominantly staff that. They can fly to a scene and pick up the medic and the EMT from that scene. That is secondary. On the east side, a rescue specialist is attached to the bird there because
Okay.
you're not going to fit a patient. It's a smaller bird, right?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Like I said, I like to know these things because another question I have for you. What's your apparatus manufacturer mainly on the Big Island?
I'm seeing a lot more KMEs. When I first came in, it was Pierce.
Okay.
I'm seeing a lot more KMEs.
Okay. And I'm assuming in order for them to get it there, it's got to be put on a ship or a boat, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Recently, 3 to 4 year lag time,
I know it's don't
not
even get me started on
uncommon.
that. Okay. And what about the like if you need parts? I'm sure they can ship it to you, but do you have an area on the island where like if you need a specific part, they probably should have it there?
Our mechanic shop, so we have a section that has a chief mechanic. They do a great job, fantastic job, kind of fleet maintenance. They have a lot of stuff, but there are times when we have to order things. I mean, we are in the middle of the ocean. So make do, and it'll get here when it gets here.
Okay. All right. Enough of my little personal questions. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I lied to you. I got two more. Gear of choice that the department uses manufacturing wise.
We're on a Lion, I believe, right now.
Lion. Okay.
No, wait up. Yeah, we've switched a few times. The whole
Okay.
state, is in either in Morning Pride or Lion.
Okay. And your SCBAs?
We are an MSA.
MSA.
MSA
Okay.
G1s, yeah.
Okay. All right. All right, now that's a that would be the end of my personal questions. To go back to you though, so how long did you stay a firefighter before you decided to promote and why?
Oh, so great question. I was a firefighter 6 years and went through a divorce, needed to get on a 40. Prevention had an opening, wanted to go to my son's wrestling meets. So did that for 3 years, which is a total culture shock, but really got and of course, typical firefighter. What'd you like the best about prevention? Well, obviously investigating fires. That was the best part. So got to see kind of fires from that step back. Did that for about 3 years. I think they call it voluntarily demoted back to a specialist, a hazmat specialist, because I needed more time. So I went to the specialty station, which those specialty stations, we have a fire engine there. So you're in essence a specialty firefighter, right? No different than most places. Hazmat, we don't have a lot of hazmat calls, knock on wood. So in essence, a firefighter. So did that for another 3. Went started looking at retirements and saw in my hometown there was gonna be some possible openings for driver. So was lucky enough to go through that promotional process. Went there, and in just the best life, I think a lot of firefighters will tell you, that transition to driver is a really special time. It was no different for me. I'm in the town I live in, the community, have family members in. You get to mentor a little bit, but you still have a boss teaching you. The captain's there. Worked with one of my mentors for quite some time. I call him Papa Bear. It's pretty funny. We've been on scenes and the public will hear, I'll yell Papa Bear, and a couple of times, oh, that's so nice you guys have that relationship. But really did. And so he brought me up. He basically so did that for three or four years, and he basically said, hey, I'm stepping up. It's time for you to step up. And I literally went from the left seat to the right seat, changed my locker, stayed in my house on my shift pretty much. I think I did like a month on a different shift, and then finally got back when he moved up and was there, and then promoted to battalion chief. So I got to be a firefighter, an engineer, and a captain, all in that same station. Timing is everything. You do have to do well on your tests and your promotional process. I am a perpetual number two. Never got number one, but I ended up every promotional in number two. So, was able to get where I wanted to get very quickly. The department's kind of filled up. That doesn't necessarily happen. You'll get sent 2, 3 hours away or to the most remote station. It happens now, but it was a lucky time for me, and I enjoyed it, just being in that community for over a decade as a firefighter of some nature. Was fantastic. And I have to the most thing I'm proud of, the proudest moment I had, it was my driver when I moved up to battalion chief, went from left seat to right seat, same shift. And he also lives in that town. So we've definitely got a little something building in our community, protecting our home community and some continuity on the shift. So I am now his battalion chief, and he's my captain, and I was his captain, and he was my driver before. So that was kind of cool. I'm pretty stoked on that.
How much municipal water is on the island? And I only ask that because you mentioned tenders and tankers. So I'm assuming in the rural parts, does your department do like drafting?
Yes. So that is something that can definitely happen. The most of the rural districts will have some form of hydrants, and then some form where there's no hydrants. And my district was no different. And of course, your more urban areas, they have the hydrants.
And that would be probably more inner city in a sense.
Yes, sir.
With you moving up through the ranks from firefighter to driver, and you said that you did that all at the same station. How long were you at that station for?
Yeah, I haven't really even thought of it, but it was probably in the 20 years I've spent at least 12 or 13 of them at that station.
And as far as the department, obviously, we talked earlier that there's really no need for ladders, a truck culture. So I'm assuming you guys are very heavy on water on the fire.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Yeah, and I've been thinking about that, Danny. A lot of people can take that in a negative form. I definitely don't. What that means to me is that you're proficient, you're trained, and you're working cohesively as a team. Because, like we discussed, when your help is 20, 25 minutes away, you don't get the luxury of saying, oh, I'm going to go ahead and wait for these guys to do something. Everybody's looking at you. My motto, I'm in a town where everybody knows you. I might know the people that you have to aggressively, with your training, get that water on the fire and do something to mitigate that. I mean, we know, put water on the fire, your problems go away. But it really is a mantra any rural captain, and I think any captain, period, or firefighter needs to have. You have to have that mindset. That also, with that training component, means you have to be able to size up. And everybody, we talk about everybody being a safety officer. You have to make those decisions, understanding the consequences that they may or may not have. So it does put a lot of strain. Our officers, our department in general, I believe, have that mentality. It's necessary. I think we're doing a good job. We're getting better. We're bringing some nozzle forward training. Chief Castros is coming next week. I'm excited about our training division. I'd be remiss if I didn't kind of give them a lot of the acknowledgments for bringing in that culture and really working with our new firefighters at a recruit academy. They were constantly teaching me at that station. We tended to get newer firefighters, and it was energetic for me. I really thank them, and I've learned more probably from them, or at least the same amount as I've learned from my mentors. I always had that model, senior firefighter, driver, captain, battalion chief, that I can learn just as much from a subordinate or that firefighter's got a year in as I can learn from the fire chief. And it's paid dividends for
Okay.
me. And actually learning more from people like yourself, get out of our little bubble, because it's very easy for us to be in on an island,
I mean, literally, yeah.
literally and definitely theoretically. So it's important here in Hawaii that we do get out, we do talk to people, and we do train our minds, bodies, souls to bring that back to protect our home.
Okay. And so I'm pretty much, I'm sure I'm going to know what the answer is, but I assume Hawaii Fire Department is a proponent of outside training, sending the men and women to classes or conferences that they like, that they want to attend.
Yes, our fire chief probably has the most outside trainings of anybody in our fire department. He's aggressive in his training model, which are different, EFO and very administrative heavy. So he supports that. I'm over here and we're in a budget crunch. And the training chief, like I said, I wanted to kind of acknowledge them. The reason we're over here, there's two of us over here, is because they want us to bring training back. So DOD's kind of, long story short, doing a class. We got into it, no funding. Training chief said, I can fund this. You guys get over there because that's going to pay dividends. That was obviously supported by our deputy and our fire chief. So it is very much a point of focus for the administrative team here on the Big Island. And not to say it wasn't before, but different mayors, different culture. The culture now is definitely turning more into that aggressive training. And I want people to understand that's not a it's not a dirty word. Aggressive is a good word. There's thought. It's not just us beating our chests and stomping on the ground. It's getting after it and doing what the people pay you to do.
Okay. No, I like that. I like that. I can respect that. You mentioned you're having Chief Castros come. So is it easier to contact groups or cadres and have them come in rather than send, manpower out, or does it not matter?
It's probably more economical to bring somebody like a Chief Castros in than to send a group of us out.
Okay.
It will also allow us to capture more people. And we don't have a hard time getting people interested in coming to
I would imagine so. Yeah.
us. Chief
Okay.
Escuso is coming at the end of the year. Aaron
Okay.
has come out. So this year we've got, on the national level, that's three FDIC keynote speakers. We got three of them this year on island.
Okay.
Fantastic. And that is a credit to the current fire chief training division. And I'm now part of that administrative team, but they did that. I didn't do that.
Okay. No, that's awesome. Okay. All right. With that being said, what kind of realistic training goes on within your department? So, That is one question, but my next question that ties into that is, do you guys have like a training grounds area where firefighters can go out of service and get some sets and reps in?
So we don't. A lot of times we will go up to a neutral venue, and that's up. We have an army base on the top of the mountain. But as far as out of service, no. Most of your training is done company level in your district. You don't call out of service. It used to be we would say we're 10X, which is in transit for a wet drill. So your surrounding stations kind of know, okay, the response may be a little bit, but that was definitely and still is something that's evolving because, as you know, working as a firefighter, you can only do so much. I can't dump the whole bed. You know, there are certain things I will not be able to do because I still have to stay in a response posture.
Gotcha.
Training will give us a guideline on what they kind of want us to do. It's every company officer's prerogative to cultivate how they want to do it. And when I was looking back, when I was filling out the ISO for the year, I said, fast water, fast water, fast. And you'll notice trends. I said, well, we haven't done anything with the doors. Can we get the door to come out? And then we'll do some forcible entry. So that's up to the company officer to kind of look at the crew. Again, I was at a house where I typically had new guys. So we laid out pretty much a playbook and it was wash, rinse, repeat, you know, kind of a thing. If they stayed a little bit longer, we start evolving into different types of training. But every captain's going to have their bread and butter on what they want to do. And mine was definitely fast water.
Okay. No, I mean it makes sense. I mean, with certain areas, like you said, I can only imagine too the steepness, any tight roads, tight driveways.
Yes, for sure. So weird lays in all those, and this is the whole island, all those rural areas, even the metropolitan, older construction, you know, it's an island. It was, you know, built not for what it is now. You know, our population, no different from where you're at. Population increases. So creative lays, those are some of those. After we make sure everybody knows how to get their gear on, work as a team, I'm calling this play. Everybody knows what they're doing. Then you start talking about, okay, now we're out in the district. What about this driveway? We can't even get in there. So we're laying in the 2.5, we're splitting for our attack lines. So again, how do you execute fast water with different plays? And that was just, you know, I'm very repetitive in that. I like to keep things very simple. Our objective is still the same objective, just the mechanics of it. The play is a little bit different. Instead of a power right, okay, we're gonna throw a screen on this one, but we're still trying to get there quick.
All right. I'm going to transition to the topic of leadership, and you've held both. You've been a company officer, now you're a chief officer. So, with that being said, what does leadership mean to you, and what should it look like?
Well, what it means is it means you're actually investing in those people you're leading. And that can be in an informal state or a formal state. I've definitely tried to be that at each level. So from a recruit with your peers, building up into those officers. And what it looks like to me, in very simple terms, is I'm investing in people. I'm investing in their knowledge. I'm taking the time to impart what I have and also get what they have to become a force multiplier, right? That's leadership. What it looks like, other than using the kind of can, doing the right thing, what it really looks like is getting to know somebody and actually finding out what motivates them. Because without that component, you won't be able to lead anybody. There can be maybe a verbal barrier, your approach is wrong. There can be a knowledge barrier as how they learn. So you have to get to know them. And true leadership is the human side of it, like the relationship part of it. I've treated it like that. It's not always comfortable, especially at this level, but there's a level of honesty, and that's back in that human interaction. You have to be honest, you have to be fair, and you have to be consistent, but you also have to be able to be agile, especially at this level. You know, my battalion, I have 50 some firefighters on shift with me every day. That's including the officers, obviously. I predominantly deal with my nine captains, because they have their own styles. They know their people better than I know their people. So I definitely try to listen a little bit more at this level. When I was a company officer, that's more of a hands-on thing, just like my captain used to do. And then he would slowly release that and let me run. He'd give me my layout. I know he's always there. He's like kind of the blankie that's always there, but he'd let you go and let you fall down a little bit, but not too far, pick you up. And that's leadership to me. It's kind of a long, ambiguous answer, but leadership is kind of nuanced. It's not just, well, I'm gonna do the right thing, and I'm gonna say this, and I'm my actions are gonna show this. We all know those are all true, but without that communication and that human relationship factor, it's not effective. The most effective leadership has a foundation of a relationship and a personal understanding of who you're leading, what your goals are, what does right look like, and emulating that, but also then receiving some of that info on how that person learns, what makes them tick, and showing you care. You know, I'm a true believer in, you know, you have to love each other. The most effective fire companies that I've seen in my career, and even talking to people nationwide, they genuinely care about each other. They don't have to be the best friends. They care about the job, they care about the community, and they most importantly care about each other. And the best leaders definitely kind of resonate that. So I try to keep doing that. And I learned that from my mom. You know, that's not necessarily something that you have to learn in the fire service, you know. And tough love, right? I mean, it's true. Those are all true. And being a company officer, being a senior firefighter, being an engineer, it is kind of like being a parent or big brother or sister. You know, that's really what leadership is about. And you have to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because you will be. You will be. I promise you that.
No, well said. Well said. The key component is the human element. Like, you know, just because you have rank and status, we're all human. You know, we all have our emotions and tendencies, but I mean, I couldn't have said it any better than how you elaborate. No, I mean, it was beautifully said.
Well, it's just the truth. I mean, that's what I always say. It's you know, this is not any earth-shaking testimony that I'm giving. It is literally something I learned from my mother. My wife shows it to me every day with my children, her patience with myself. You know, these leaders come in all shapes, sizes, and yeah, you can learn something from everybody. When it comes to leadership, my kids, I have two older children grown out of college, and then I have two little ones. All four of them teach me something. They have been my biggest teachers, probably outside of my mother and my wife. It's been my children, actually, who have led me probably the most. And that's knowing some fantastic firefighters and throughout my career, and mentors and what have you.
I'm going to switch topics to recruitment and retention. With you being out on a big island by yourself, is Hawaii seeing a difference in numbers now than back in the day?
Absolutely. So I can frame this pretty well, because I was talking to another chief officer about this. And so when I bid 40 positions, about 1,000 people, that's what it looked like. We have a few prereqs now, the EMT prereq. basically, and just general culture change. And I'm not talking Hawaii, I'm talking probably the world, right? Or at least America. Maybe you get 60 for 40. By the time you whittle them down, you're pretty much hiring everybody off the list. I don't necessarily think that's good. I think it could be. Competition is good. And I tell everybody this when you promote, I have that aggressive mentality when I compete. And it's a healthy aggression and competition, but I want to compete for anything. When you are on the fire ground, you are competing with fire, basically. So I think that competition has allowed me to be successful. And the same thing goes when you're going for a promotion. If two guys are going for a promotion and there's two spots, well, how much work are you putting in? Like, I know I'm going to get the job. Now, if you tell me there's two spots and 20 firefighters going, well, you're gonna see who studies. We're gonna find out real fast. And it's no different for the entry. So we have seen a huge dip in that 20-year span. I just gave you a snapshot of what it looked like 20 years ago and what it looks like today. And it's not as competitive. I don't know if the job's just not as appealing, which it's gonna sound silly to us because I'm like, I mean, this is the best job I ever had. You're Peter Pan. If somebody told me I could be Peter Pan, I would have signed up for it much earlier because that's what it is. I'm working in a fire station with some of the best people in the world doing good work for my community. And you're gonna pay me? Wow. Forget about it.
Now, I mean, I personally think it's a cognitive issue of we're not telling people what the job truly is. In a sense where, yes, we respond to medical calls, crashes, fires, water rescues, high angle rescues, all that good stuff. But then we don't shed light on, hey, this is what you're going to see. Potential, like I saw a friend of mine put it the best way when there was an article. I forgot what the article was on, but he responded to it. And one of the things he put in there, which truly made sense to me, he's like, as firefighters, you're getting paid to be uncomfortable your entire shift, which means lack of sleep. You're going to feel fatigued. You're going to get sweaty. You're going to get dirty. He's like, that's what they're paying you for. And like, when I sat back and just thought, like he put, you're getting paid to be uncomfortable for your entire shift, potentially. I was like, it makes sense because we know some of us tend to gripe whenever like it's a busy shift and you don't get to eat on time or you don't get to do your normal routine. It takes you out of your element. And after a while you just like, oh, this is a crazy, I didn't, but we signed up for it. Like it's not the everyday thing, but there are days where you're gonna get run over, and it's like, hey, you signed up for
That I couldn't say that better, but you put your hand up for a reason.
it. That's right.
This job, I'm pretty sure, and talking with this group of gentlemen, and that's how I became recommended, the Wolf Pack. That's what we call ourselves. We're just dedicated to making the fire service better, but we all put our hands up. You don't have many jobs where you do that. So take it seriously. It's a serious job that can be extremely fun. And that's kind of maybe that's not appealing, but in those moments, and I've been that firefighter that, oh man, I could, I'd always say, man, the hunger beast is here. I'm hungry, I'm getting hangry. At the end of the day, what gets you back to center is, well, I signed up for this and it's pretty dang awesome. And those bad days you're talking about, so what that looks like for me, not being a medic who's just getting their teeth kicked in, that's being on a fire for 36 hours No shower, you know. I mean, literally, I could say some gross stories, but you know, also, those are probably my best moments when I sit back and reflect. Oh, I remember that time and some of the hardest laughing, you know, just looking at your brother or sister next to you, face full of dirt, you know, just, and it stinks in the moment, but it's probably. You're going to reflect on that. I know I surely do. I reflect on that. We had the lava eruption over here and brand new incident management team. Long story short, we're there 6 weeks, no sleep. You know, you're fighting lava coming out of the ground. This is, it's not going to go well for you. And it felt absolutely horrible in the moment. But when we get together, we reflect on it. We did that. You know, we were there. We signed up for this job. We showed up. My wife was pregnant at the time. I have to thank, you know, all of the family's support, but thank those team members. You know, we just lost one of them a few days ago, and he was our logistics section chief. And we just happened to room together. I worked as the IC, and he was like two pay grades above me. He's my mentor, and for them to have that foresight to put us younger people, and we just talked about this, in those leadership positions and have that mentorship. I mean, it was like a master class in team building, leadership, working for a common mission goal. Those are the best moments. Enjoy those moments because it'll be gone like that. I mean, it will be gone. Those hard days, they don't feel very good when you're doing them, but they'll be the ones you brag about at that kitchen table. You'll be telling, hey, I remember this time. And that's where that good leadership comes in, when maybe your kitchen table's getting a little rowdy, and say, hey, today wasn't that bad. All we did was this station routine. We had a couple calls. Yeah, we might have had to wash a fire truck and polish it. You know, let me tell you what a bad day looks like. And that was still one of my favorite days. And you give that perspective through that human interaction, it brings most people back, including yourself, because we all have a peaks and valleys in our career. There are some firefighters who are extremely consistent, and I am so much in awe of them that they just have stayed driving. Me personally, I've definitely had some peaks and valleys, you know, in my career where if somebody wasn't lifting me up, I probably would have stayed in the valley. So it's my job to pay that forward, right? This job is one of those jobs people did it before you. People have given the ultimate sacrifice for this job. So honor it. And if you're not going to honor yourself, honor them and honor the people you serve, right? And I'm a big fan of it's challenging to work in a district where you live, you have family members. It's also extremely rewarding because the saying is treat everybody like your family, right? Well, when you work in a small community, everybody is your family. Those calls you go to. So you never forget that. And I used to tell new firefighters, because it was told to me by my mentor, hey, just so you know, when you go out on those calls, a lot of eyes are on you. Sometimes before you get to the hospital or before that incident's done, our phones are ringing. Hey, who's this guy? This guy, you know, spoke and wasn't polite. I said, so Brunicini motto, be nice. You're out there, that's your customer. Serve them. You know, those are just good things to keep you grounded.
No facts. No, it's facts. In your opinion, what do you think the fire department can improve on, or what do you think that we're doing good on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
So we retain good. Here on the islands, there's not another gig in town, right? You know, you can go however many miles in different department. We're the only gig in town, so we're going to retain you. We do well in that, and that's because, again, we're on an island. You don't have another option. You can be a crash firefighter, or you can be a county firefighter, or a federal firefighter. And the crash in county, very small. We're the main gig, right? That's how you're going to get on the job. So as far as recruitment goes, I would like to see more, me personally, more kind of recruitment in the, and again, this is pie in the sky. I'm not definitely not saying we don't do this, but I would like to see more athletes recruited, the military members. I think those are fits for us tradespeople. Problem is you make way more money working in construction here on our island.
Exactly.
So you have to, it's weird. You almost have to tell them it's not what you're gonna make now. It's the life you're gonna live. And you need passionate people to articulate that. It can't be done on a video. This is more public outreach. This is where a more robust outreach part of our department would what I think would probably help with that. National recruitment. I'm here in the most beautiful place in the world. I should be able to steal some good talent from you. I should be. It doesn't happen. And that's because it's so far. It costs more for a gallon of milk or a gallon of gas. Whatever it may be, but I think back to that human element, you have to get out into the community more. And we need people focused on that, no different than at the fire station. I got to work on being a hazwoper at least, right? I was a tech, but I need to know a little bit about rescue because I got valleys in my district. I need to do no wildland. I need no structure. I need to know tanker ops, brush trucks. All this all hazards component has spread us thin. I think when you look at our prevention, even on our island specifically, they do code enforcement, plan review, fire investigation, and pub ed. Well, there's like five of them or something. Oh, and they run the drones now too. So it's like there's not enough hours in a day. Everything needs to be built up. The training bureau has been built up. That is, the training chief has done good with that, but even that needs more. A lot of times we forget, being line personnel, that without that support service, we're only gonna be this good. That support service can take us up here. Fire prevention can keep us from going into some of these bad buildings. Are you checking their suppression, right? Their alarm systems. Training can make us work on a cohesive playbook. I'm doing a callback at this station. Well, I don't know how these guys operate or gals, it's make us a little bit more standardized, but without that support, you're gonna cap out. It's almost like if you don't have a wolf pack of people outside your department pushing you and reference points and hey, we should go to this conference that I would never know about. I'll only be as good as what my department shows me on memos. I have to aggressively, we back to that word, treat my career aggressively and my training aggressively. And when I say mind, body, and soul, it really is. Because I could be the most tactile, physical firefighter out there, but I need to put something between my ears also. I can't just put my head down and, oh, hot stuff, I got cold stuff, let's go. There has to be a method to that madness, and we need to keep pushing that forward, and those support services hold us up as line. And we forget that. I know I have in my career.
An off the topic type question. Are there still active volcanoes in Hawaii?
Yes, we have one right now. I just had a buddy, he's one of the Wolfpack guys, Jason, come out, and I was like, hey, I just texted him. He was on island. We had done some family time, and I said, hey, it's going off right now. You better go, if you want to see lava coming out of the ground. And he couldn't go that day, and the next day it's just the steam and the fog. So yeah, we have the active volcano here on this island. It's just our island.
What does a fire response to that look like? Or do you even do anything unless it starts threatening like areas of, I don't want to say civilization, but where people are at or something like that?
Yeah, so a couple different models. The one that's going off right now is in a crater, a caldera. It's
Okay.
fine, right? It's a tourist attraction. It's in Volcano National Park. What's
Okay.
happened in the past is you have slow moving lava that will you just get out the way, right? Evacuate. What we had in 2018 was unique because there wasn't a warning, and is literally called fissures popping out of the ground, shooting lava right in a community. So, I mean, the gas is toxic. It creates its own weather. Press comes in. Anytime you get people involved, right? Now people want to come in. Now there's security. I mean, we had the National Guard. Everybody was here. CNN, all that was going on. You need to get out the way is the simple answer. But then there's a lot of monitoring. What about the wind? Now, is it going to happen somewhere else? And we were lucky enough that Maui had a connection and a more robust team to some type one guys. And they came in and kind of, because I mean, you're looking at that and you're like, I don't know what we're going to do. So that was a lot of help. That was hit the button for help and get that help coming. And that is a model you should have in your career is call for help early and often. And that you could tie to anything. You can talk about your personal development. And you can talk about tactically. I am notorious for that. I will ask for everything. I'll send it back if I don't need it. And that was taught to me at a very young stage in my career. And I still do that to this day because you have to get out that, you have to get out that mindset and be humble enough to say, I might need some help. A lot of times we don't do that just as bravado. We do that as trying to be courteous to, so Danny, you're my next in. Nah, we'll get it. No, just keep them rolling. If you guys get here and don't do anything, you're not going to be mad about that. I mean, you're going to be mad you don't get to do any work, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of times we get in this mob, oh no, don't bother them. The medics, I have to say, are fan, oh, I don't need a third man. I don't need a third gal, I don't need the extra help. We can do it. And then they come back and brief you and say, hey, we should go. And as a company officer, we just kind of would listen to the calls and myself with my captain. And then when I was captain with my driver, we just look at each other and say, who, which one of us want to go? And because we're going to go. If they don't need us, we pull up, no need, drive right back. But at the end of the day, calling for help early and often was something I learned and still continue to preach. If we can remember that, we'll be in better positions when things go sideways, because they will. They will.
How did you meet Chief Ben Thompson? Because he's the reason why this has occurred.
Yeah, so it was during COVID, Command and Control at National Fire Academy. So I want to plug that to all the listeners. Go to National Fire Academy because that's a great opportunity where you have no choice because you're away from your department. You're in a class with most of the time nobody else from your department where you have to interact. And we talked about this as a group. COVID pushed us together. Because they had all these testing requirements. Because usually you'll go to those classes, you get two or three real good buddies. And I still do almost every class, still have this class was unique. And that's why we gave it a name. It's 20 of us. We text daily. We go to trainings and symposiums and conferences together. A bunch of us are going to FDIC next year. We plan this out to purposely be engaged with each other. We help each other through, personal struggles, professional struggles, and we celebrate each other's personal and professional successes. So we're in this class, and we had great instructors, Jimmy Smith, who's no longer with us, and Larry Coker. Jimmy is a retired deputy chief from Philly, had a story for everything. Literally, you want to talk about a 40 story fire? Yeah, he was on it. He's going to give you that story. Oil refinery? Yep, he's got one. Larry, Louisville assistant chief, same thing. wealth of knowledge. So even our instructors got pushed together in this class, and Ben was in that class. I'm a pretty gregarious person, so you build out an ICS structure, and I was kind of the ICS guy in that class. So I was like, "Hey, make a director of merriment." They're like, "What is that?" And I said, "Well, I'll be in charge of the fun stuff." So I'd be in charge of where we're gonna go eat or whatever, and we just stayed together the whole time. And I've never seen a class yet, previously and to this day, that really gelled that well, has stayed connected. Literally, they bounce around the country visiting each other. A lot of them come to me because I'm in Hawaii, but I was at FRI. It was last year, a year before, with a few of those gentlemen. When I was bidding, they were doing Zoom interviews with me to get me ready. We've done it for other people, and it's just a great group of guys. So Ben was part of that group, and then we had two Bens. So he was little Ben because we had a big Ben, but then he turned into big Ben. So I don't know which one's big Ben and little Ben anymore. But
Okay.
yeah, so
Okay.
he is somebody I call all the time. "Hey, I got this problem. How would you handle it?" Rather than, because that gives you me an outside perspective.
Right.
And same thing with him,
Right.
So
Okay.
it worked out great. That's my brother.
Awesome. Awesome. And hopefully at some point with today's world, the NFA can somebody higher than me can figure it out and get all that good stuff resumed again. Because I think right now everything's on a temporary pause. But I'm sure there are a lot of people who have gotten value and have found value from attending classes there. I've never been there, but I do feel it's important that we educate firefighters, and that was a place to go get educated and network and meet people, get outside of your box. So hopefully somebody higher than me can figure that out. But it's awesome how somebody who's in Alabama, somebody who's all the way out in Hawaii kind of meet together and form that friendship.
Yeah, I mean, preach, preach. IAFC had a link. I know I definitely put my two cents in there. I'm not a social media person at all. I think LinkedIn is all I do. I definitely put something on there. It's free, first of all.
That's right.
That's how I got exposed, luckily early in my career. And the prevention element is really what exposed me, because there's a lot of prevention stuff there. But the fact that it was free, we're in a budget kind of area, that was one of the avenues you could get off island. It wouldn't cost the department as
That's
much.
right. That's right.
Our fire chief, like I said, he's been to NFA more times than anybody in our department. We have an assistant chief of support services. He's also an executive fire officer. So the leadership has a dedication to it for sure. And I was lucky enough to get exposed. What I would recommend to firefighters out there, command and control pieces. That's going to keep you engaged. You get to play on a radio. You're going to see the same type of people that class. So I think Radcliffe was our only firefighter. He's a captain now in Palm Beach or Palm County in Florida. It's like 1,000. It's a big department. Anyways, everybody's some form of an officer in that class. A lot have risen to chief officer positions. I totally believe it was that class. I had a great internal pack, but that's my external pack, and they've definitely pushed me. And I try to give back as much as I can, whatever they need. We'll continue to do that, and yourself included. You ever need anything, you have my number. You have access to those same people
Yeah.
for
Okay.
sure.
Love it. Love it. I always like to ask this guest. I always like to ask the guest this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
It's a great question, and it's not too far away. We're not,
Well, that's good.
yeah. We're in a 25-year model. I bought a few of my military years, so it's close, the option at least. I'm good where I'm at, and I know a lot of people say that, but I truly believe in my heart that I got to be somewhere near the work And it's not to say at the desk there's not work, because there is. There's a lot of work, and I do hold that piece now as well. But going back to being Peter Pan, once you remove yourself, like I still come out of a firehouse, right? Even
Right.
though I got my own little area,
Right.
you'll lose a little bit of that. And I want to stay in Never Never Land. What that looks like for me is really developing not just now firefighters, but officers that have a passion, a love for this. They love the job, they love each other. I sent you that cover photo. That's the junior guy in my battalion. He's at my house with me, and I learn from him every day. He sits in my office, we talk, he cuts my hair. And I remember being a junior firefighter cutting the guy's hair.
Right.
I want to keep developing them, but I want to develop officers. I want that leadership component. I want people to understand that the relationships count. Everything you do has to have some form of intent behind it. You will mess up, be okay with that, but keep trying. Keep trying. I mean, if a fire, an incident is kicking your butt, you don't get to quit. You have to be tenacious. And it's no different. What I would like to see is myself stay tenacious till the last day. On building people up and developing those people. And then hopefully, because I've seen a lot of the retirees still giving, hopefully I keep that component as well. But I want to stay in Never Never Land. I don't want to grow up yet. So battalion chief is definitely I'm the farthest away from Never Never Land, but I'm
Right.
still there. I'm on the
Right.
outskirts of town, and I'm going to stay there.
Okay. Okay. I can't, there's no rebuttal. So it's everyone's personal goal or belief opinion. So I always like to ask the guests because it's one of those things, you don't think 25, either 20, 25 or 30 year career. Oh yeah, I just started. It's fine. Before you know it,
It's gone.
it's there. And it's like, hey, retirement's not, you just got to sign when you want to, when you want to be done. So, I mean, yeah, it's crazy how life just, before you know it, man, in the blink of an eye, it's over.
Yeah, I mean, and if you just keep that aggressive, we started there. We just keep that aggressive mentality, in a positive way. Stay with it, love it. It'll go. It'll be gone. A lot of the retirees tell me, hey, it's fantastic. They also share in quiet rooms. I miss it. There's,
Oh, of course.
yeah,
Yeah.
and you will. But if you build those relationships, and that's what, kind of reflecting back on my friend who just passed away, I talk to him about once a month, and sorry, boy, I'm still feeling that is, he said, I wish I could be there to see this happening. He had moved away, and that meant something. And I said, you are still here because I'm here. And that's a true legacy. There's many people who feel the same. The past few days have been an outpouring of that. And that's kind of what you want to leave in your career. It's the work is the work, and somebody will do that work. The relationships, those are yours. You get to keep those. And those people invested in me. And I believe it's just as important for me to invest in people. And that's where that circle stays a circle. You're not breaking that chain at all. So that's kind of where I'd like to see it when I leave.
Love it. Love it. All right. Chief. Troy, thanks for doing this, man. I know we had to reschedule, and you got up super hella early to do this. I know you got class in a little bit, but no, I have thoroughly enjoyed picking your brain, talking to you, learning something different. I've never been to Hawaii. My wife always mentions, that'd be a nice place to visit, which I have heard it is. To get there, though, whew, they say that's an adventure in itself to get
It's a
there.
flight. It's a
Yeah.
flight,
Yeah.
but you got a place and you got a brother in me, come on down, man. We'd love to see you. We'd love to show you a little piece of our beautiful spot. And yeah, man, I'd love to see you face to face. I appreciate what you're doing for the fire service in general. Appreciate what you're doing every day when you go to work. And thank your family for me, because without them, you don't get to do it. You don't
That's a
get to live
fact.
in Never Never Land
That's a
without them.
fact. And it's so easy to lose sight of that important aspect of family when all you want to do is get better. But to get better, you have to go away. You have to go to conferences, got to go to trainings. And it's so easy to lose sight of like what's truly important. Because at the end, like we just said, when your time's up, because your replacement will be there,
Oh, yes.
your replacement will be stepping in your shoes. Hopefully, when you walk home, you're walking to people who are there for you.
Man, amen. Amen. And I'll make sure I thank my wife today whenever she wakes up. Because I'm here on a different island for the whole
Right. Right.
doing exactly what we talked about.
Sacrifice right there.
Staying aggressive in yourself, investing in myself for the betterment of my community department. You do that way more than I do, and I thank you.
Well, it's a we thank each other type relationship. I also want to say thank you to Chief Ben Thompson for allowing us to meet. When I got your email, I called him the next day and I was like, "Hey, just do you know out of curiosity, Troy Gibson?" He's like, "Sure do. He's part of that Wolf Pack." And I was like, "All right." So, Chief Thompson, if you're listening, thank you very much, sir. And Troy, sincerely, thank you. Thank you for doing this.
I appreciate you, brother. Be safe, be well, and God bless.
Yes, sir. You too.
All right. Aloha.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.